The function of leadership is to produce more leaders, not more followers. Leaders of Men.
G'day and welcome to Leaders of Men. I'm your host, Nick Warner. In a society that yearns for legitimate male role models, I speak to men that are forging the pathway to a healthy, integrated masculinity. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Jedi Azuma, host of the Rising Man podcast and creator of the Rising Man movement. Jedi has been in the field of men's leadership and empowerment for the past 10 years. As a rites of passage guide, mentor, and leadership coach, Jedi has impacted the lives of thousands of men on his mission to initiate an entire generation of men into power and purpose-driven service to the world. Despite his many roles and contributions to men's work, Jedi considers his most important jobs to be father and husband. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome back to Series 2 of Leaders of Men. Super excited to have Jedi Azuma first up. How are you, brother?
I'm feeling really good, man. Honored to be here. Glad to be sitting here with you speaking once again.
Excellent. Let's jump straight in, mate. What does masculinity mean to you?
You know, I tend to make a distinction between masculinity and femininity. And before I say that, I think it's important to make that distinction between male, female, masculine, feminine, man, woman. I think those are actually all three different things. So specifically, masculinity to me is a word that captures a series of characteristics or qualities that polarizes or balances out the feminine. So for me, masculinity is based in logic. It's based in science. It's perpendicular lines. It's plans. It's strategy. It's unidirectional focus. So a lot of qualities that have traditionally and historically been associated with men or males, but I think it's a quality that all of us possess, every single one of us. And on the contra side of it, the feminine is more loose. It's less structure, more formlessness. I think of the element of water. And so for me, I also associate masculinity with fire. In fact, in some places, I've started using the distinctions between fire and water to describe masculine and feminine, because those two words, masculine and feminine, they hold so much charge. There's so much story and narrative already associated with them.
Yeah, I find it's quite common that whenever I drop the term masculine and feminine, some people get really upset about it. And, you know, how can women, like, why is it the women can't be that? And why is it that men can't be this? And it's like, yeah, they can be. But, you know, I often find myself getting people to just change the wording to something else, whether that's stillness and movement or alpha omega or whatever resonates with them. But the way you put it, it just makes absolute sense.
Yeah, I think it's important to neutralize it, to take some of the energy off of it. I mean, really, masculine is just a word that describes things, that describes a way of being that isn't necessarily associated with one type of human or another. It's something that we can all possess. And really, I think we all should possess to bring the world and all of us into balance. And when we don't, when we're not willing to be in our masculine or in our feminine, it can throw things out of balance. And so I understand why it's a charged topic for people, because it's been that way for a long time. But I think it requires a deeper look at what do we actually mean when we use those words?
What was the defining moment for you to shift direction from your old life?
So when you say old life, you mean my old vocation, my old occupation into what I do now?
Exactly. Yeah. What was almost the catalyst to go? Because I find that most of us we are living a certain life and then something happens and then we suddenly shift into this direction.
Yeah. Well, it happened before I actually made the full pivot and shift. I was classically trained as a physical therapist or a physio for some of you out there. And I received my graduate degree and was working, doing physical therapy in my early 20s. And I remember, I'll never forget my first day of work, my real job in the middle of New York City, you know, Grand Central Station. I had an office right above there. And I was so anxious. I was so uncomfortable at my job. Probably a combination of first day jitters, but also my body just knew something. And I remember going out on my lunch break. It was the longest 4 hours of my life. I was like, oh, finally, I get 30 minutes. And I stepped outside. I'm looking up at these huge buildings and thinking to myself, man, I can't go back. I can't go. How could I possibly go back for my second part of my shift? And I remember in that moment, it was actually terrifying because I thought to myself, there's no way I could do this for the next 30 years of my life and then retire. I knew right then. I mean, I was 23 years old, first day on the job. I can't do this for the rest of my life. So it was terrifying because I had just gotten this job. I just finished graduate school. I mean, all the time, money, resources, everything. And I knew I didn't want to do this anymore. And so I went back. I did my second shift. I continued to work as a physical therapist for years. But that was the moment I realized something had to be different. And so about a year and a half into working that job, I said, man, I got to get out of here. I got to go find something else. I don't really know what it means to be an adult or to be a man. And even though I have some great relationships with some adults here in my life, my parents, my other adults in my life, I wasn't getting what I needed. So when I was 25 years old was when things really shifted because I left my job. I traveled on the road for four months with just a backpack and I was searching. I was searching for who am I really? Who am I really? And what does it look like to be a man? And that's what set me off on this path. At the end of those 4 months, I encountered a community that was really heavily based in men's work and men's circles before Instagram, before all this stuff started popping off. And simultaneously, I met a community that was doing rites of passage work for both men and women. And that was when I realized that, okay, there's a different calling here for me in my life. I don't know exactly what it is yet, but I'm going to start walking in this direction. So a couple of really specific defining moments, but for some reason, as you're asking me that question right now, that, you know, my lunch break on my first day of work in the Big Apple was a huge one because I was like, holy shit, I can't do this for the next 30 years. No way.
How long ago was this?
Let's see, I was 23. I'm 33 right now, about to have my 34th birthday next week. So what's that, 11 years? 11 years ago?
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
I know you've got a couple of kids. If you have a 12-year-old son, what's the most significant thing he needs to know?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. My son's about to turn six in a couple of months. So, you know, I feel it'll be a graduation of this message that I tell him. But by the time he's 12 years old, I really intend to encourage him to find out who he is, not who he is based off of how he grew up and his parents and his aunties and uncles, but who is he really? And honestly, it's started already. We started encouraging that in him from the day he was born, truly. And he's such a unique person. I think that at 12 years old, it's even more critical for those young boys to be encouraged to find out who they are. Because there's this thing we do as kids where the most important thing we need is for someone or some group of people around us to give us what we need to survive. And so everything that we do is motivated by how can I get what I need to survive? Now, on the basic level, that's like food, shelter, water. And then beyond that, it's love, acceptance, belonging. So all of our actions are motivated by guaranteeing our survival. And I believe that at some point when a boy becomes a young teenager, that's when they're beginning to learn that they need to provide that for themselves. If you only orient yourself in your life around the things you do to get something from other people, then at some point it becomes ingenuine, inauthentic. So, you know, at 12 years old, I'd really be encouraging my son, hey, be who you choose to be and let the rest of life sort itself out, but be true to yourself because that's really the only thing that you can control. Can't control if people are going to continue loving you or providing for you or wanting to support you. The ones who will are the ones who accept who you are when you're just being that version of yourself.
Working with rites of passage, what's the version of a rites of passage that you'd put your son through, and at what age would you do that?
Well, for me, it's not according to chronological age. If I had to guess and put a number on it, it'd be sometime around 12, 13, maybe between 13 and 16. It's really more about readiness, preparedness. For me, there's rites of passages that mark different moments in life. And for a boy to mark his passage from boyhood to manhood, I believe is a really important one. So for that, to me, it's a recognition from the people who know him best, not just his mother and his father. In fact, I think I should be all but removed from that conversation. It's really about the uncles, the aunties, when they see in him, hey, he's ready. He's ready to take this step forward. He's ready to make that shift from being taken care of to being a caretaker of the community. And so to me, that will be when his community decides. And we've arranged our lives in a way that there's people constantly around him who are getting to know him, who are seeing him, who are building relationship with him and rapport with him. So that when that time comes, it's not something that his mom and I have to decide. And I don't know what he'll decide for his rite of passage. You know, we've been working very hard to create a culture of raising our children in a certain way. And the friends that we do that with, the aunties and uncles that I'm referencing, we've all gone through the same rite of passage of going out into the wilderness and fasting for 4 days and four nights. So, but both my children, my wife and I have both gone through this ourselves. So I would definitely encourage them. And we've been talking, as soon as he could understand that, you know, oh, where's daddy going? Oh, he's going to go take some men out into the desert. Oh, what are they doing? Oh, they're going to do their vision fast. Oh, okay. He already has a reference for that. And so we've been talking to him about, hey, one day when your uncles decide that you're ready, you'll go out and you'll do this too. So he already knows. You could ask him about that and he'll tell you, yeah, when I'm ready to become a man, that's what I'm going to do. So I think it's just a matter of continuing to speak with him about that and letting the community really decide so that that burden is not only on the parents. It's something that we share.
Amazing. What's an uncomfortable truth about you?
An uncomfortable truth about me. Well, I'll go right to what's present, man. What's present is that it's a really hard journey of being an entrepreneur, being a father, and of being a husband, and trying to do all those things while making a big impact on society. I was just thinking this morning, I was like, man, I would be so much more financially comfortable if I just kept that 9-to-5 job that I was working in Grand Central Station in New York City, and I graduated through the years, probably by now I would own my own thing, or I would be a regional director somewhere with my degree of experience. And that would probably be the last concern that I woke up with. But instead I chose an alternative path. And even right now this morning, you know, the uncomfortable truth is I woke up this morning super anxious and uncomfortable, thinking, oh man, it's been a tough stretch. These past 3 months, personally and professionally, have just been incredibly challenging, really stretching my capacity to see what I'm made of. But in the same sense, I knew I was having this conversation with you this morning, and I knew why I was here. I knew why I had said yes, because this is my greater desire is not that I leave my children with a fortune, a financial fortune, but that I leave them with a legacy of culture and an example of what it looks like to fight for what you believe in. So I woke up today, I was like, man, some of this is just the price of admission. This is the tax on living a life that way and getting to leave that legacy behind for my kids. And I'm willing to pay that. It hurts. It's uncomfortable. I mean, I've definitely lost some sleep and not feeling settled. However, I mean, that's also more, I think, the natural state of being for most beings on this planet, is that tomorrow's not guaranteed. I've learned that lesson in folds this year, man, of just seeing people lost from COVID, people close to me lost from all types of unexpected tragedies. And even in just the newspaper, I was like, man, there's another person who just passed away suddenly. There was an accident, right? And they're gone. And they thought that today they'd be waking up and going to work and doing their job. So as uncomfortable as it is, I realized that, yeah, okay, well, I'll take this type of discomfort over that type of discomfort right now, you know? So yeah, man, that's a really good question. I hope that you get a lot of honest answers when you ask that of people.
Yeah, I do. And it's the beautiful thing about asking people like you and like these leaders of men is that there's no real shying away from vulnerability. It's just like, yeah, okay, this is it in this moment, and it's fucking uncomfortable, but that's where I'm at. So your answer resonates.
Can I say something more to that too? So yeah, I lead a lot of men's groups and men's circles in all types of capacities, right? And so what I consistently get is feedback over the years that the men in those circles would love to hear more about what I'm going through. It's very easy as the leader to focus up on the team, right? What's best for the team? What's best for these guys? How can I take care of my guys? And even in a professional sense where people are paying me to be in a group with me and they want to hear more about my challenges. I don't know how many times I've had to hear that by now over the course of 4 years that I've been doing this like professionally, where I just get to hear over and over again, guys want to hear what I'm going through. And the more I've leaned into that, because it's a little bit counterintuitive, right? You're like, well, as a leader, if I tell guys where my life is uncomfortable and feels like it's falling apart, they're going to go find somebody else to follow. It's actually been the opposite. That guys are like, wow, that actually makes me feel closer to you. Makes me feel like I can trust you more. Makes me want to lean in more. Makes me want to be a part of what you're doing more. So I think to myself, okay. So I've kind of debunked that belief in my head. It's still something I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure about that? But at the same time, I've also looked at myself and said, I actually don't care so much whether somebody's going to hear my vulnerable truth and that's going to make them not want to follow me. Because at some point that it just pivoted and I realized I want to be more true to who I am. It's not worth the energy for me to put on the performance anymore. It's really not. It requires so much energy. And I just don't have the energy to do that. I'd already shuffled off a few of the things that are troubling me in my life. So I'd rather put my attention there than worrying about, oh, is this person going to think differently of me? Or are they going to want to follow me? And I know that that's a really hard thing to do. It's been a hard thing for me to do. But the more I speak with men, and especially in these circles, and I see them disappear for a couple of days, I'm like, dude, what's going on? I don't want to talk, I don't want to talk about it. It's like, well, it's just you and I right now. Tell me what's going on. And they start telling me something very ordinary, probably around a relationship or probably around not wanting to look at themselves, not wanting to be seen. I'm like, dude, bring that to the space, because that the idea that we look better when people can't see our mess is a complete and total myth, right? Especially in the men's space. I can speak unequivocally about the men's space. 100% of the time, when there's a space of confidence and trust and non-judgment, when you bring your vulnerable truth, not only is it accepted and appreciated by the rest of the men who are witnessing you, but also, and this is the ironic part, men will tell you that they're going through the exact same thing, right? So it's like having a nail stuck in your head and sitting down in a chair and not wanting to tell everybody about it. But then as soon as you do, everyone kind of lifts their hat and says, dude, I got a nail stuck in my head too. I just didn't want to talk about it. Thanks for leading the way there, man. So I think it's just a cultural thing around, going back to what you said around masculinity. Masculinity is about not even acknowledging that we have a nail stuck in our head, not wanting to talk about it. In fact, look the other way. I don't want you to see the nails I have in my head or the arrows I have sticking out of my chest. But that's the kind of leadership we need right now. That's what we need right now for this generation.
And this is exactly what you said. This is the reason behind these questions, behind speaking to guys like you, is because social media has, there is like this sheen of, or this glossiness of what we perceive these guys to be, because they put out a certain photo or a certain, and that they seem like they're so above everybody else. And it's like, yeah, hang on. But they're also exactly like everybody else, like with all the flaws and with all the fucking fear and with all the discomfort. And I remember there was a men's circle that I was hosting. And one guy was 21 and he shared this quite vulnerable thing about this experience with his mum. And the next guy was close to 60 and he had the exact same fucking experience the exact same week with his mum. And it's like, it doesn't matter our age or our culture or whatever. It's like, as men, we all experience variation of the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's when we start to speak about it, exactly as you said, it's like, oh yeah, I went through that too. Oh shit, really? I don't have to feel so bad. Yeah, exactly. So if we stop hiding, if we stop holding onto this thing for fear of looking less masculine, we can all breathe a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I appreciate your vulnerability, man.
Yeah, well, it's a practice. That's another thing too, is it's not something that we just flip on. You know, things like vulnerability and commitment, which I know myself, I'm guilty of doing this, but also I think pretty much any guy out there who's working in men's work, you throw out words like vulnerability and commitment, saying that these are things that men do, that men should be able to do. But that's like saying that you should be able to, you know, hit a golf ball 400 yards the first time you pick up a club. All right. Or I don't know why I thought of that reference, but basically anything, you should be able to hit a 3 foot, you know, or a 3-pointer, whatever it is, by just picking up a basketball for the first time. No, these are practices. These are things that we develop over time. My son doesn't know how to commit to anything. He's a boy. He's got to learn that just like I did. Like, I'm still learning how to do that. And same with vulnerability. And just because you can go through the mechanics, because you've seen another human being do it, there's a lot to contest with. And with vulnerability, it's the emotional space. It's the heart space. It's the feeling space. That's like navigating through an invisible minefield, right? You can't see those obstacles in the same way. It's a little bit more different. It's different because it's abstract, but it is. It's a real thing that you have to, and that's why it's important to have people to support you saying, hey, it's okay. Go ahead, step on that mine. I'm going to be right here to help pick yourself up, right? It's okay. No big deal. And we can go through this at your speed, whatever you want to do, but let's do it. You got to get to the other side of this minefield. I think that's important to mention too, because I think we oversimplify the message because we only have 2,000 characters on an Instagram post. It's like, okay, what you need is vulnerability, and what you got to do is you got to say it right now, and you got to go find a place that's safe and, you know, spill your guts. The end. Sign up for my course.
Right. Yeah, I have it's an ongoing thing with my partner where, like, I'll speak an uncomfortable truth and she'll be like, well, it's been 5 minutes since that happened, why didn't you tell me right away? And it's like, fuck, like 6 months ago it was 7 minutes and now it's five, and eventually it might be two. But it's a constant practice. It's a constant, like, reminding and then making a mistake and getting back on the horse. And yeah, it's definitely not something you just switch on and that's it.
No, definitely not, man. Definitely not.
When was the last time you cried in front of somebody else?
Let's say 9 days ago. I sponsored a Native American church meeting for 40 men from all over the world, all different walks of my life. And it's part of sitting in that meeting and opening up my heart. I shed some tears for a brother that we lost just a few months ago, a brother of mine that we lost to an accidental overdose. And so that was the last time in front of 39 other men, crying in front of that fire during a ceremony.
Thanks, man. When was the last time you were out of integrity?
Oh man, I guess this morning. And integrity, maybe we speak a little bit more about that. Let me actually define integrity first, and I'll tell you about the story. So for integrity for me is the bar that I set for myself. I think everybody gets to decide. Words like integrity and honor, I think, are very synonymous. So I get to decide when I'm in or out of honor. No one else can tell me. I know the standard I set for myself, and it's an internal barometer. I know when I did something that's out of line with who I intend to be. It feels rotten. It feels like there's a twist in my gut. Something is just out of sorts. I don't need, there's no metric or scale to measure my integrity against. So this morning, for example, didn't get enough sleep last night. My wife wanted to sleep in, so I'm up with the kids, and we bought these new two tiny, cute little kittens. And my 2-year-old daughter is trying to train her that they're not stuffed animals. Of course she thinks that they're stuffed animals. And of course the first thing that she wants to do in the morning is grab them and squeeze them and carry them around everywhere. And I'm just consistently trying to teach her, you know, like, hey, we got to be gentle. They're trying to sleep. Let's not go grab them out of their, you know, little sleeping area. And so trying to make breakfast, trying to make coffee, trying to make time for myself. I look behind myself and I see my daughter climbing up the cat's little tower, and she's grabbing him by the scruff, pulling him out. And the cat's like, rear. And I'm like, Itzy, you know, raising my voice at her, you know, trying to get her to stop, because that was the quick knee jerk reaction that I had. And I just see her face like, what did I do? And then all in one moment, I think to myself, hey, dude, she's 2 years old. She loves these little animals. She is not trying to do harm to them. So why are you flipping out? And I'm flipping out because I didn't set myself up for success, right? I didn't set her up for success. And that's not her fault. Who's the adult in the room, right? Who's the adult in the room and who's responsible for this? It's me. Is that who I want to be? Do I want to be that type of father, that type of example for both of my children? No. So to me, that's out of integrity. And that seems like a really simple example, but that's the standard that I hold myself to. And I know that I'm going to have moments like that, right? I mean, I gave that up a long time ago, that I was going to be a man who was in integrity and in honor 100% everywhere in my life. It's just not reality. Mm-hmm. But I definitely hold that high standard for myself because of I know who I want to be. And I know when I'm not being that guy. It's painful. It hurts. The sooner that I can own it. And so what I did was I kind of like shake it off for a second. All right, what's the right thing to do here for me? Go over to her, say, honey, I'm sorry. And we can't grab the cats out of their sleeping area like that. We got to be gentle, trying to teach her. So long response to your question.
No, I'm really happy I got to ask you that, because whenever this integrity piece comes up, I always think of a post that you wrote regarding going to the ATM and taking out money and receiving too much. And what would you do knowing the bank fucked up and they would happily take your money? Mm. But what would you do if you got money for free from them? Mm. And I remember reading that thinking, wow, you know what? I probably at the time would have just taken it. Mm-hmm. So, but you just planted this seed of like a constant checking in of like, is this in integrity? Is what I'm doing in integrity with my physical body, with my words, with my heart's highest calling? Like, it's so easy to be out of integrity or to be in integrity with other people, but it's the deep, like, as you said, like the one that when only you know. Mm. These are the ones where they're a little bit trickier. Mm. And a little bit easier to let slide.
Sure. And I was that way as a kid. I think we all were, right? Because the last thing we want to do when we're younger is make life harder on ourselves. So it's funny. I'll say a little bit more and then we can move on to the next question about just integrity. I often say, and this is a definition I got from one of my mentors, that integrity and honor is doing the right thing when no one's watching, which is exactly what you're alluding to, right? No one was watching. The ATM didn't know. This was like a month into COVID. So no one had any idea that when I told them what happened, they had no idea. They had to go back through their bank log. So I probably could have walked away with an extra $800 in my pocket and I could have used it at that point in time. But that event I had the exact same feeling in my gut. Maybe a little bit more intense, but the same feeling is when, you know, when you go to the public restroom and you kind of toss the paper towel into the garbage can. And sometimes you like hit the edge of the garbage can and it bounces off. And then you're like, ugh, you look around, you're like, man, this floor is disgusting. I don't know what the hell's on this floor. But you're just like, am I going to walk away and let somebody else who's going to come clean that and go pick it up? Or am I going to, you know, take the extra second, go over there, pick it up, you know, who knows what the hell was on it, and throw it in the garbage can every single time. I never let myself get away with that, because as soon as I do, I'm like, and I've actually done that before. I'm like, nah, dude, this bathroom's too gnarly. I'm out of here. And I go to step out the door. I'm like, wait a second. And I literally pause. If someone heard what was happening in my head and saw me, they'd probably think I was crazy. But in that moment, I'm like, well, if I'm willing to compromise my integrity right now, that opens up the door for everything to be in question. The ATM that dispenses an extra $800 to me, that's up for discussion. Or, you know, do I go and do I apologize to my daughter for raising my voice? That's up for grabs, right? I've worked so hard to build up my sense of integrity that I'm not going to let a paper towel compromise that, you know? So making everything matter, making everything. And somebody else may not agree. You're like, dude, it's a paper towel, whatever. Somebody else is going to pick it up. But if that's the attitude you have around a paper towel, then where else does that attitude show up in your life? Oh, dude, it was just one time. I was in like a totally different country. It doesn't matter that I slept with somebody else. I don't got to tell my girlfriend. Like, okay, is that really how you want to justify it? And also, is that what you would want somebody else to base their life and their sense of integrity and honor off of? You know, is that what you would want your, like you asked me, like my 12-year-old son to be holding as his measure and bar for integrity? So it seems simple, like in theory, but it's actually one of the most difficult things we do is hold ourselves accountable. Maybe the most difficult thing I've ever had to do in my life is to hold myself accountable.
Great answer, man. What are you most afraid of?
You know, I think the thing I'm most afraid of is not taking my last breath and feeling like I fulfilled on my vision, on my mission, which, you know, I don't think anyone's asked me that question since my friend passed away 3 months ago. And that it might be different because right now in this moment, I have a different understanding of what fulfilling one's vision actually means. There's plenty of people who passed away before their vision came to fruition, but simply because they planted the seed in their life and they didn't get to harvest the fruit for themselves doesn't mean that they didn't fulfill on it. But up till this point in time, that's been my greatest fear, is that for whatever combination of circumstances or reasons, I may not fulfill on what I came here to do. And the implications of that are not just that I get to raise the trophy while I'm still breathing, right? Like obviously the metaphorical trophy, but that I won't have hit that bar for my children, for my nieces and nephews, for the men and women around the world that I get to impact, that in some way I'll fall short and I'll fail and I won't hit that mark while I'm here. And that responsibility will be passed on to somebody else. That's probably my biggest fear. And there's so much other things that are tied to that, because my vision is large and expansive, but I got to say, that's probably the simplest way I can express it.
So on to that, what is it that you're creating?
Well, on the surface, everybody sees me as a men's leadership guide and rites of passage guide. My mission within Rising Man is to initiate an entire generation of men into leadership and powerful purpose. And the reason for that is because I believe by having a generation of men who have been initiated into leadership, who've identified what their purpose is on this planet, that they will then be able to be the stewards that we need for family, for community, for a new way of life in this rapidly changing world. So underneath all of that, I'd say that's like the tip of the iceberg. I'm creating culture. I'm creating community. I'm enrolling people into a lifestyle that I choose, that I feel proud of handing over to my children, that I hope my children will give and hand off to my grandchildren. Cultural perpetuity is a term that has recently come into my awareness, which basically means the perpetuating culture, you know, handing down from one generation to the next. A word like legacy, I think, is synonymous with cultural perpetuity. That's really what I'm creating. And I'm doing it in a way that feels good to me, that I believe will set not only my family, but my extended family up for generations to come. And there's a lot of different ways that I do it. It's not just professionally. It's every conversation that I have, every encounter that I have, the way that I conduct myself in the morning when I wake up and I have a few moments to myself. I feel like all of that is relevant to this pursuit that I have.
What's your deepest desire?
Deepest desire. Well, my deepest desire is that 7 generations from now, so my great-great-great-grandchildren are sitting around a fire in a ceremonial and intentional way in honor and reverence of the earth, and they respect and appreciate the resources that they have, and they honor the ancestry that they come from, and they're thinking about their great, 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 great grandchildren in every decision that they make and every step that they walk. To me, that's really the only thing that I care about is that reality happening. Period.
And finally, what would you like for men to know with every fiber of their being?
And just putting a punctuation mark on everything we talked about today, that it's okay to own who you've been, what you've done, who you are, what you feel. It's okay, because you're not, there's absolutely no way that you're the first person, the first man in the history of men who has ever felt the way that you feel or done the things that you've done. There's too many of us. There's too many of us right now. And that there's a very low likelihood that you're the only person that you know who's going through the same kind of thing, right? With 1-2 degrees of separation, you're not alone. So it's not enough for me just to say it. You really have to give yourself the physical somatic experience of taking the risk and saying the thing out loud to others and having them raise their hands and put their hand on their heart or their hand on your chest and say, dude, me too. Like 100%. I get it. Maybe I'm not there right now, but I've been there before. Or maybe I've never experienced that, but I know someone who has, and I've supported him through that. So to really feel with every fiber of your being that you're connected by your experience, your emotional experience, by your historical experiences and events that you've lived through in your life, you're connected to everyone else. And to know that you're not alone, that's probably the most important thing. If we really sublimate it, that you're not alone. And if we flip that to the positive, you are surrounded and connected. That's really the most important thing.
Beautiful. Thank you, brother. Now, finally, where can men find you?
Yeah, probably the best way to find me is everything that I'm doing with Rising Man right now. So if you guys are Instagram savvy, at Rising Man Movement on Instagram, I put everything up there. I also have my personal Instagram at Jedi Azuma, where I haven't been as active recently, but intending to get back to it. And risingman.org is where we have all of our offerings, all of our programs. You can get a better taste of the stuff that I was describing here, because we're fully living that mission. We've got a whole community of men around the world who are involved in that and always looking for more.
Amazing. Thanks for joining me, brother. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Honored to be here, man. Great to chop it up with you.